Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin.
With guest co-host
T Pangolin.
Alright, so you can do the intro thing now.
Ugh. Don't
That's the general reaction to starting the show, yeah.
Hi there, guys. My name is Jet, also known as T. Pangolin, and at the risk of sounding a bit self-aggrandizing, you may know me as both the director of the Colonius Legacies mod pack and the showrunner of the Civ Battle Royale AI game series. Now, welcome to Polycast, episode number 276, the podcast focused on all things Civilization and, presumably, ripping Firaxis a new one for everything that they've done, haven't done, or have yet to do. Joining me on the cast today is Mad Jin.
He fell asleep.
That's true.
You know, Jet,
I
going...
got bored and walked away.
Oh.
That is a reaction to an Australian. That, like, you know, we are so used to this on an international stage, and all coming true. Makalua?
Why don't you find your coffee resources down there? I thought Melbourne had this whole thing going on with the coffee culture.
It's pretty apt. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Dan?
I'm up and over, as opposed to down and under.
That is absolutely gross. I did not want to hear that. And the Mian Team.
Speaking of which, my swords are stronger than ever.
Oh boy, my pen is mightier than that sword. What? Okay, here we go.
They've been strengthened.
Like the majestic green falcon that they have swooped down at a million miles an hour to spook the hell out of us with Australia and also mods, but also Australia.
Well, I think we have to have an intervention with Mackie already because she is just going to keep playing Australia in the Turncast Weekly Games unless we pass a rule that says that she must at some point play somebody else other than Australia.
Alternate weekends or something. I like not having to worry about the housing so much early on. I like stealing all the extra land with pastures.
Hmm.
Oh, so you like that Australian coastal cities always receive extra housing, the unique ability.
Mm-hmm.
Pastures also trigger the culture bomb effect, grabbing adjacent tiles from other civs and city-states, and yields from campuses, commercial hubs, holy sites, and theater squares are enhanced in attractive terrain. Hey, terrain, you're looking pretty fine. Oh, wait, no, that's a different type of attractive. Oh.
Yeah, but still, putting down...
I say that when I see the Australian landscape. As an Australian, I do look at my surroundings and just really fall in love and go, damn, you look fine. And there's a lot of caressing that goes on, but that's just an Australian thing.
The focus on the desert thing is kind of weird to me.
Is it?
Well, I've been in the outback, and it's not a desert by any stretch of the imagination. Okay. Only 18% is actual desert,
okay.
And up to 30% could be considered desert just because of the lack of rain. That's only 30%. Yeah. 70% of Australia, the continent, is not desert by any stretch of the imagination. Granted, a lot of it would be considered plains.
Yeah, plains and coastal is where... Here's a fun fact. The Outback Station isn't a term that actually anybody says in Australia. It's actually something that I came up with for the pre-release to Civ 6. I came up with a couple of designs for Australia. Designing a station, that sounded unflavorful, so I decided just to stick Outback onto it. And if you look at the blueprints that we kind of designed for the Civ and designed for the Outback Station, it is an uncanny similarity. So I'm not sure if it's a nod in our direction or they just kind of went, that sounds cool enough, let's just do that. But either way, an Outback Station is not what people say. I honestly did like the biggest laugh when I saw that in the first look video.
I'm sad they didn't put camels in there somewhere.
The Outback Station unique tile improvement unlock at the Guild Civic provides food and production with bonus food for adjacent pastures. So what about this unique ability? And of course, Australia led by John Curtin, but the Citadel of Civilization. Australia gets bonus production at the start of a defensive war and when it liberates a city.
I actually like that flavor of it anyways.
Yeah.
It flavors Australia to want to liberate cities.
Absolutely.
Rather than go, yoink.
City state the AI run over. Actually, I should liberate it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I really like that aspect. I look at the entire design of Australia and I actually look at it and like I can't see any flaws because I look at a lot of other vanilla based game civs and I feel that there's a lot of gaps in logic and not a lot of justification for including a lot of these units. And some of them are just like inordinately stereotypical when you could use this platform to share sort of more diverse things about these cultures and empires that everybody knows. But Australia is done in probably the most perfect way. Like, I feel like I could have designed this sieve. That sounds so self-aggrandizing and shitty. But, like, I care a lot about my country. When I design sieves, I really want to go out of my way to make sure that it's halfway between extremely fun to play, but also historically accurate and everything included is somewhat justifiable.
Jet's been a regular co-host on Modcast, so if anyone is hearing his voice and thinking, he sounds familiar, you've probably been listening to Modcast. And one of the recurring themes from Jet and the other regular co-hosts and guests is that, one of the reasons that I get into modding is because I look at the abilities that Firaxis has put into Civs and Civilization 4 and 5 and 6. And you know what? It's pretty boring and or stereotypical. And so to hear you say that, no, it sounds like they got it right this time, is worth noting.
I think it absolutely is worth noting. So surreal, because you push so hard for it, and then it's here, and then you're just like, I don't believe it. That doesn't make any sense. It was just so unexpected that they just dropped that out of nowhere.
Game update for Civ 6. Teams, guess what? Multiplayer. Teams. It's a thing. And it's also nice that they tell us what does that exactly mean in practice. Well, when one teammate finishes research on a tech or a civic, their teammates receive a boost for that tech or civic. Okay. Teammates share war status against opponents, allied status. Teammates work together to win or lose the game as a single entity. The religion and culture victories have been reworked, so they are more cooperative. The religion victory
you say that.
I say that.
You say that, except that there are people complaining that the AI starts and finishes war while on a team, independent of the player.
The religion victory requires you to convert all civs to one of the religions started by your team. So I can already hear the conversation, so whose religion is that going to be? The culture victory requires one member of your team to be culturally dominant over all players not on your team. So that's okay. Elsewise from the update balance, which of course would apply to multiplayer and single player, units that are embarked now use an era-based strength value instead of their base combat value, and change movement rules after disembarkation. Cannot land on shore with more movement than your land movement allowance.
Aww. Yeah, really? You can't land with 6 out of 2?
Oops.
Well, the snarkiest laugh I've ever heard.
That was a good benefit of the Berserker, though. So that
it was like a reason to actually use them.
Kind of really nerfed them. The commercial hub versus harbor.
Both provide +1 trade route capacity, but only the first one applies. Used to stack for +2 capacity total.
I don't think
that was necessary. Come on. I mean, it's not like, I'm not going to construct a harbor now, but why? Come on.
I don't know. Many trade routes.
Speaking of the water, updated ice generation to allow more for circumnavigation. That is appreciated, given that, with the exception of Pangaea, we probably got some kind of water on the map, and, I can't go in the North Pole and the South Pole. It's not going to allow. I'm blocked
by
this one hex ice.
To help you,
love the friendly tribal villages inside of ice that nobody can access.
Oh, yeah. Nope.
I mean, if that's the North Pole, it's clearly Santa's workshop, and you shouldn't disturb it anyway, but... Elsewise in balance, many of the texts that reveal strategic resources have been changed to reveal the resource before it is needed to build a resource-dependent unit.
Yay! It only took a patch. But at least it's in vanilla this time.
Yeah. And I'm particularly happy for this, the following one here. Players can now build obsoleted units if they do not have access to the strategic resource required by the upgrade unit.
Boo.
What do you mean, boo? This is a good thing. This is a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
Yes, it absolutely is.
It is like, not.
How would you mitigate this concern, then?
Is your concern, then, if I can still build obsoleted units by revealing the strategic resource, that I'm just going to build a whole bunch of those obsoleted units and then get access to that resource and then have a whole bunch of cheaper upgrades than as if I had tried to build it from the beginning or buy it from the beginning?
Well, there is that, because that's clear. Because upgrade costs are way cheaper than purchase costs or build costs.
You can do that without having them made this change that you could still be able to build obsolete units, because you could just be like, I'm going to have to construct this type of unit, so I'm going to research this tech until there's one turn left, and I'm just going to keep building some more of these obsolete units so that I can go ahead and boom, buy on the next turn.
Yeah, that's minimal, because eventually you have to go boom to get through the tech tree. What this is saying is that you could be like 5 techs beyond that tech. And
cut
still be
your
doing
access
that.
To the resource.
Let's say you spam out war chariots for giggles.
All right.
You want to upgrade to knights, except you don't have any iron. Or you have iron, and you just choose not to take it or whatever, so you can mass spam it. Well, the thing is, building knights requires 2 iron. Buying knights, well, in theory should require 3, but buying knights is about the same. If you mass produce obsolete units, you circumvent the entire point of the encampment, which is to reduce the strategic resource cost of building units and buying units, because you can upgrade through that strategic resources for 1. So that actually makes an entire district less useful.
Well, then, as far as I'm concerned, we should be addressing what's making that district less useful. I still want to be able to construct obsoleted units if they do not have access to the strategic resource required.
You would have to, rework the amount of resources required to construct units and upgrade units.
This is a bad half step. This is allowing exploitable play while not doing the next part that should have
it's
been
It's hard to call always, it an exploit when it's intentional design. It's just bad design.
Okay, fine. It's not really an exploit, but
Well, knowing how much the Firaxis devs, try to listen to the community at this point, it'll be interesting to see if this conversation makes any changes, or the fact that once it is out there in the community and people do react negatively to things, they have a tendency at some points just to go, okay, let's probably cordon this away, especially if it is a big sort of community request that doesn't exactly take a lot of effort to overhaul. Like, the development cycle for Civ doesn't ever stop until the next one's out. So I can't see this being a long-term concern.
Now that we actually have strategic resources earlier than the units that are going to use them, for the most part, that actually makes it easier to plan out. So you wouldn't even need this particular change, because you'll go, oh, well, there's iron over there. I want to build iron stuff. Okay, I will go over there and get that iron. Being able to show up earlier means you can plan better for it, which is better.
The whole point of Civ is to play the map, I guess. So, yeah.
This just seems like addressing some complaints without actually making it better designed, or keeping the design idea similar to what it was before, but actually making it more usable.
Of course, there was also technology tree balance, adding several prerequisites to address paths through the tree that were too quick and led to early transitions to... era transitions too, really. Yeah, still nothing about the whole district constructing thing, but that's okay. We didn't think that was going to be addressed. Advancing through the eras.
Yeah, I'm really confused about the tech tree in general, just that, even just from an aesthetic perspective. You really have to scroll to see what one technology leads to another, and it's just kind of a nightmare to navigate. So,
It's because the Civ 6 tech tree up until this point has been swim lanes. You have the top 3 swim lanes, which are all your econ techs and a little naval, and those are the ones you research for all of the game after the medieval era, anyways. Blatantly ignore the Renaissance and beyond bottom half of the tech tree because no one needs it. This sort of helps them make game pacing a little better, though it's not as good as what they could do. Basically, lots of people who want the tech tree just redesigned. Now, having all the econ techs all connected and all the military techs completely separated for multiple eras after the medieval era just makes it look bad. It also means pacing is bad.
Found myself not needing to build as many campuses as I thought that I needed to. And I was just pretty much progressing fine throughout the entire
thing. Yeah.
I feel like I took quite a long break from Civ 6 just because I thought like a lot of the math was just extremely hard to counter, especially when you're earning so much money, but you can hardly have any production. And it's just, oh man.
Elsewise from the update, there's miscellaneous AI and bug fixes. Under miscellaneous, added a city-state slider to the game setup. Yeah, where did that go exactly? We had that in Civ 5 from the beginning, so thank you for that if we want to play with that. Added true start location feature, where civs start on the world map at their geographic origin. From personal experience, the true start Earth map, if you find yourself as one of the European-based civs, you may find that you're not able to settle on the first turn, depending upon what other civs they put on the map, because there's not enough room to do that.
Yeah, I've always been interested in the way that Firaxis designs their Earth civs. If you look at the world maps that the modding community has done, even though it's still a struggle to survive in Europe, if you compare that with the True Start Location Earth map, it's a bit different.
It would help if they use something bigger than, a standard size map.
Yeah.
Yes, it forces you. It's the only size map it will allow you to have for the True Start Earth location is standard. The beginning, the end, that's it.
They could have at least went with the huge map, which would still pack in Europe, but you'd be able to settle on turn 1.
This is a good step in the right direction to add True Start Location, because it's something that people have wanted for a very, very, very long time. I'm very interested to see where Firaxis takes this further.
I'm glad we've got the True Start Location, but it's so cringeworthy on turn 0 But it is evident that there are issues with this. So if we're going to have different map sizes, if I, for example, chose that I want to be Rome and that's calculating what civs you're going to put on the map, maybe you just say, no, we're going to have to exclude X number of civs within Europe because it's going to be too crowded.
Yep. That's not impossible to code. It's pretty easy, relatively easy. I mean, I say this without any technical code knowledge whatsoever.
And I'm definitely not saying that you should always settle on turn zero. It's just when you don't have a choice to settle on turn zero, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Under AI, it's artificial intelligence, or something resembling perhaps intelligence at some point. Barbarians now rampage when their camp is destroyed. Okay, good. Barbarians may now pillage tiles to heal. Hello. Fair enough. I'm surprised they weren't doing that before, but okay, good.
Barbs before would be pillaging, but I don't think they were healing.
That's
they
right.
Did not heal, no. They did not heal.
And it's kind of like, because if you go pillage somebody and you get science and stuff, culture and stuff like that, I don't think the barbs needed the science or the culture.
It was always unless they were trying to
become a civ.
I almost feel like barbs need their own little economy, to be honest, to help them produce units and stuff like that, because right now they're just spawning out of nowhere. It'd be interesting to see if there could be a mod out there or some sort of mechanic that could be introduced in which, in order for these barbarians to grow, they actually need to actively go out there and make money to fund their exploits.
Let them get paid by other civs to go harass somebody.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, the idea that you could seek out barbarians not to destroy them, but to have them join you as a mercenary.
Or you go over there and bother that guy. I hear he's got lots of pastures. It's also stuff like maybe they do need to go pillage some science-y related stuff so that they can stack up and then eventually have the ability to ride horses. And so that there's no horse barbs before they pillage enough stuff to learn about riding horses.
I'd like if barbarians could establish new barbarian camps instead of just popping up. It would just be something in which they would go out of their way to settle on strategic resources so they could produce strategic units. Oh, God, you got me. Got me thinking of mechanics.
Barb camps, I would also want to have a zone of control. So when they're first there, they only have a ring around the barb camp. And then as they grow and get bigger, attacking, basically going to pillage and declare wars, their area of expansion slowly gets wider. Yeah. So that if you leave a barb camp alone for, say, 20 turns, it'll have made it out to the third ring from the barb camp, and anything within that third ring could then be used.
Yeah, and then you could have like some great civs that interact with barbarians in unique and interesting ways, especially because that mechanic would be really fleshed out.
Elsewise in AI, reduce frequency of your troops are at my border warning, including adding a grace period of 2 turns after the end of open borders before the AI starts complaining you're too close to their territory.
Oh, thank you.
It's good. Definitely a nice change. I'm not feeling it as much because they added that ignore button, but that is nice for kind of closing the gap on some of those idiosyncrasies. So does this reduced frequency include the scout that was adjacent to perhaps a city that wasn't even founded until the turn rollover that the scout was there? Your troops are too close to my border. Really scared of that.
Shut up or I'm going to take your border.
AI will now liberate minor civs and cities of current allies. Will now be more, my favorite is actually, will be more aware of gold income and work to bring in more. How about the spending of the gold that they bring in? That's still kind of a thing. But anyway, will now continue to research repeatable texts and civics.
Well, those are the ones at the end, so.
My brain first processed that as, so the AI just researched guilds and they're going to research it again? Oh, you mean like at the end of the, okay.
Yeah,
like, once they've researched
that can be bad.
Once, they won't just stop forever, I guess.
I am a little concerned because the civic tree has 2 repeatable civics at the end and you can get them independently. So will that mean that they make it to the one and then not bother with the other half of the top of the back end of the civic tree?
Very interesting question.
That would be bad. Also, why the hell does the civic tree have 2 repeatable civics? Why did they not just slap in a single one like the tech tree? Like, seriously.
Who knows?
It's idiotic. Apparently, they fixed the Congo relics, no longer giving the psychotic amount of faith. they seem multiplied, but, it's 3 to the 3 to the 3 to the 3.
Oh, yeah.
But, as some people have been testing, apparently, once you get it now, you get no multiplied. It doesn't multiply at all.
Oh, like it's supposed to.
So the fix to getting multiplied like crazy faith is you get nothing.
Maybe this is their effort to say, like, you were able to benefit too much from this for such a length of time. So we're going to scale it back for a period of time where you don't actually get anything that's going to balance out afterward. I think that's what they're going for there, yeah.
Yeah, it's just been tracking how much faith you built up with Congo Reliquaries over the number of games. And it's like, okay, once you burn through that, then we'll let you have normal stuff again.
Also in bug fixes, three things that are spy-related. All of your active spy missions stop in a city that you or your ally has just captured. I wanted to be able to steal a tech boost for myself. That's not nice. Spies will not have the steal tech mission available to you when you've already completed all techs.
Okay.
Well, okay, yeah. Yeah.
When a player is destroyed, his captured spies die with him. Why? I've been protecting the guy in my jail. Why does he have to die? He's just like, well, that's the end of that. He just, offs himself? Oh, come
on. Executed.
But I wanted to keep him and sell him to somebody else.
There you go.
Oh, and you are no longer allowed to declare war on declared friends or an enforced peace period from the troops near me warning.
Aww.
Come on. And I mean, if you're supposedly a friend and you've got troops near them, then maybe that's your way of saying, yeah, that friendship thing's just not working for me. So.
Mm-hmm. That is one way of saying it.
This is a little hamstrung, but you know what? Okay. I'm not going to make a big
deal. Another way of saying it is additional bug fixes.
Is it like minor text updates?
No, it's all giving Swordsman 5 more combat strength. Boom! Walking away now.
It's a bug fix. Lol.
Double civ pack incoming. Ooh, what could it be? It's going to be a historical heavyweight civ. It's going to be like some sort of Persians and Ottomans or something like that.
During the Devs Play Outback Australia livestream that Firaxis Games' marketing manager Pete Murray, flanked by game lead designer Ed Beach, said that the next DLC pack will be a double civ. So Canada and Atlantis confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, fun. Atlantis. So they're improving all the ocean resources now, right?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one in this game. Like, Australia actually made coast settling viable, which is something that I find really interesting. But beyond that, if you're going to do an Indonesia or a Malaysia or an Oman or something like that, it's just really hard to design anything coastal related. So I'd be interested to see how they approach something like that, if they do approach something like that. Because it does seem like they are trying to cover areas that they haven't gone before, like Australia covered coastal.
In that Reddit thread, there was a Phyraxian sighting. There was a Phyraxian response. Lead character artist Matthew Keane responded to Chris NH saying, Klingons confirmed, which Keane replied in Klingon, which translated, according to the Traduca Translate, one day perhaps.
Yeah, mad respect for Matthew Keane. Jeez, just like the work that he's done on the leaders has just really brought Civ in 2017, I reckon.
There's tons of speculation about who they are. Unfortunately, this thread didn't see the other thread, which told you exactly who they were.
Yeah, there's some pieces of the puzzle that have been put together.
And we're not going to talk about that at all?
We are, perhaps.
The information got popped in by the usual way all information about Civ leaks and stuff comes. Somebody went straight to the Steam database. And Valve basically effectively gave it all away. The file names were the Civ names on this one. So it was really, really obvious.
Oh, is this the Macedonia and Persia?
Yeah, that one.
Oh my god, three Messiah Greek leaders. Oh my god.
No, he's Macedonian, not Greek. Get over it.
Messiah.
That's the same. Cleopatra's not Egyptian. Get over it.
No,
it's
not.
You can link them all together.
Alex,
that's right. Make Cleopatra of Rome instead of Egypt. Just switch her.
Just for giggles. We'll still have to see.
One of the segments we haven't on the show in a couple of years is community focus, and more than half of the people who filled out our survey last year said, hey, we would like to see community focus in 2017. So, we are delivering Civ Battle Royale. I don't know, there might be somebody on our panel this week that might know something about it. I don't know. quote, massive artificial intelligence showdown which takes place in Civilization V with one goal in mind, complete and total world domination. Hunger Games-like tournament taking place on a realistic Earth map with every civilization placed truly where their capital stood. Every single city flip, struggle for power, and smart move is then recorded, narrated through text, and uploaded either weekly or bi-weekly for all to witness, comment, and even produce amazing original content for. That's right, so we're talking about in the Reddit here, not only was like Civ Battle Royale become a Civ subreddit, air quotes in a way, there are also Civ Battle Royale subreddits, which no doubt will beget their own subreddits, which will beget, and this is an excuse for me to use that term. You're currently on the third iteration, and by saying you are currently on the third iteration, I'm referring, of course, to T-Pangolin Jet here. Ooh. So what is exactly your connection to Civ Battle Royale anyway? Why are we talking about this?
I had been, for quite a while, been a member of this modding community, and I wanted to show off what the modding community could do. There was one or two AI games that had preceded the Battle Royale, and they were quite popular, but I thought this style of AI game where everyone starts in a true location, because if you look at these previous ones, what they did was they had just the base game 43 civilizations, and it was a clusterfuck, just to put it cleanly. So what I decided to do was, okay, how can we balance out the map and how we can also get the community involved in which they can also help balance out the map and choose the civs and choose the leaders and choose everything and just, yeah, put everything into an AI world and get people to follow along and document really record this entire story.
First off, if that was your clean description of what was wrong with the previous AI-only games, I can only imagine what the dirty details are. But what exactly were you trying to accomplish with the Battle Royale that the previous AI-only games, so where people were playing Civilization V and everything was being controlled by an AI, what were you trying to address with the Battle Royale? What was wrong?
That's a really good question. I was trying to address the fact that within the modding community, there's always been barriers, essentially, because of the way that Firaxis has operated historically. We've always felt very sort of isolated off in our own little niche corner of the internet. You have this game in which, you know, it's been the top 10 most played game on Steam for the past 10 years or so. And there's such a small community that mods, and there is such an extensive history of Civ 5 mods. So I started to moderate the Civ subreddit pretty much explicitly to help them out in terms of community stuff and to showcase and do more Civs of the Week, but also with the ulterior motive of showing off mods. I thought that this was basically a perfect way to showcase what the modding community can do, but also see what we can do just to also create an entire community that surrounds it. The crazy thing about the Battle Royale isn't just the game itself and the stories that come out of it, it's just how the community reacts to those stories. We have a rotating list of narrators in which they all provide their own analysis on what's happening. And the fact that there's just so many different people contributing so many different things, it really just boosts the Battle Royale to the point where we got a Guinness World Record, because it just snowballed and spiraled out of control to the point where everyone was producing content and so many people were enjoying so many different things. There were newspapers and stock exchanges and rap battles, and just there's an official novel version of it. Everybody sees something completely different in it. It's one of those things that have such a broad appeal that it brings in so many different types of people. The entire climate of the Battle Royale I find just interesting from a sociological perspective, because there's so much trash talking on the internet. This community almost served as a respite from that, because all the trash talking was done because they support a particular civilization, they were trash talking everybody else. So this entire project was kind of like everybody on the community was on the same page. There was just so much goodwill, and it just completely spiraled to the point where I now have way too many resources to work with to create something that is just ridiculous. Done the first one, that crashed up to like 19 parts or something. We got up like to turn 300 and it crashed. And the second one got up to 800 before I started to work on the Mark III. And then there was like database errors that restricted me to do stuff with the Mark II. But yeah, this entire new Mark III one is really interesting, but it also means that because we've developed so much new content and new mods and new technology for it, we can basically put that and use that technology as a defibrillator to revive the Mark II and make it way more stable. 61 civilizations down to 41. So the game is almost drawing to a conclusion, but it's been a wild ride along the way. I think what we're trying to do at this point is just develop a system in which we have a quota, because you can take Twitch clips now and all combat animations are going to be on. We can just get these people who are watching the stream live, or whenever they're online, they can just say, okay, let's just take a picture here. We'll just take a clip of this here. We can write it down, have a certain number of those, then we stop streaming, and then we start to produce the video content for that, or like image content or image albums or however people want to do it. So you can either kind of, you know, join it live, or you can show our curated content afterwards.
So actually going through with the AIs competing against each other and then saying this is what happened in that particular turn or over those sets of turns, that's really kind of just the beginning of what the content of the Battle Royale has turned into, because you've already kind of gotten to what other people are contributing to the Battle Royale, even if they say, you know, well, I'm not going to be able to sit there and run through the game myself, like able to process a turn. So what could other people do? What are people doing?
Because it was a solo project for the past couple of years, I realized that if this needs to have any sort of semblance of stability, then I need to completely rework how everything works and just get like the top contributors in the community and see if we can form something of a team. System that we have now, web developers, we have people focused on streaming, we have people focused on video content production and voice actors. It's really hard to tell people what to do because I've never specifically asked the community to generate their own content. All we do is just kind of have our eye on the prize and just deliver something that's extremely decent with sincerity and goodwill, then content will just naturally come out of the woodwork, and then we can incorporate that into whatever things that we do, because every time we released an image album, we would include unique art that people had included, or charts or statistics or all these different things related to power rankings or custom-made maps. It's great.
You never asked for that to begin with, but it sounds like you're encouraging it because you will take then what somebody has done and then kind of incorporate it into an official stream. Have you ever had to stem somebody, like saying, like, thanks, we get what you're trying to do here, but we'd rather you not do this because reason X?
Not really. I mean, the community, for the most part, actually manages itself. If you look at the Battlesiv Battle Royale, we've actually never had a list of rules on the side. Everything is so almost democratic in a way. I don't know. Everybody produces their own content, and some people will tell people if they don't like it, but most people don't, and most people encourage people who have ideas. I have given parts over to narrators, and then they have returned with some very interesting commentary, and some people have complained about that, and some people complain about the swearing and all that sort of stuff, but, you know, it happens every now and again, I guess.
Well, the fact that you've got people complaining versus reflective of that people are not only consuming the content, but they're also thinking about the content and wanting to give you feedback for that. I mean, getting complaints knows that you've made it. Like, you're
oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
It's because, not just, like, having an impact.
Can respond directly to them, but obviously doesn't really fix a lot of stuff. I just try to look at people's complaints and incorporate them into the content going forward so that they don't have a reason to complain going forward. Or if they do, then I can keep on incorporating. The reason that the Battle Royale has kept on trudging on is just because I look at exactly what the community kind of wants and then subtly and slyly incorporate it into what happens so that the entire sort of product is end up boosted. And you look at something and from the outside, it just looks like literally just an AI game. And you can't understand why people are enjoying it. It's basically, yeah, the community that surrounds it, that lifts up the product, that makes it look as awesome as the actual game itself. If there's more people following something, it adds legitimacy, and other people kind of want to peer in and go, okay, why is this legitimate? What are you doing to make it legitimate? So, yeah, no, it's fun. It's very fun. It's really nice to get all those shout-outs from the devs and all that sort of stuff, and hopefully, yeah, being able to influence a lot of things about the dev cycle in terms of True Start location and them focusing more on AI games, including that as like base functionality. It's a win for us. It's nice.
But I was going to ask about the connection back to the base game and 2K and Firaxis, because some people might be listening to this saying, well, that's nice that you're off in the corner of the community doing that for Civ, but I don't really see how that's going to have an impact on the game that I'm playing, which is the release version. And I think a lot of people who might not have been aware of necessarily the Battle Royale or any of the AI games that came before. Think of it was a Firaxicon 2015 when Ed Beach and other Firaxians said, you know, we actually go through AI simulations to try to get a sense of where things are going. And I think based on what you've described, that there is some similarity to what you're doing with the Battle Royale, but you're going beyond that, including, I understand, in the Mach 3 that you've got now a community patch AI that's being incorporated along with the mods. So it's not just bringing mods that bring in civilizations that then the existing game mechanics, but you're actually changing the game mechanics as well, which I guess someone could then also say, well, if you're changing all of these things, then how does that really relate to the base game? And for people listening to Polycast, they might be saying, Dan, why are we talking about this in this extent? Shouldn't this conversation really be on Modcast?
That's a very interesting point to bring up. Ooh.
It's no different than somebody doing total conversion mods.
Yeah. Right? So basically,
you can't really complain about modifying the game.
In anything that we do try to change the game, what we're trying to do is not just totally convert it to the point where it's unrecognizable, but also boost the image of Civ as a game overall. We've included so much tech in Mark 3 that is completely new. It's almost like we're developing enough content to add have a new expansion, and an expansion isn't necessarily a total conversion. It just adds a lot more content that is inclusive of all the previous content and doesn't overshadow it, but it also brings everything up at the same time. So yeah, lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of just minor touches and bells and whistles and things that put over here and put things that put over there. There's an entire sort of political in-game system based on a mod called Rise to Power, in which each civ gets their own political parties inside of them, and based on your decisions and the type of government that you choose, you have different types of political parties and you have different types of political figures inside of your things. And then yeah, it's just a lot of information, a lot of new tech. For example, we have ticker text down the bottom of just like in-game events that's already happening. We've expanded the processing turns AI thing, in which you can just see all the statistics of what people are researching, what people are doing at any one particular point of time. So yeah, we've just really kind of gone all out to see what we can get away with the resources that we have, because Mark 1 was just me just doing stuff by myself, and then Mark 2 was just me doing stuff by myself. But at that point of time, there were more mods in the community that I could incorporate. But at this point, now that I can actually actively ask for new modifications and new things, we are really going all out.
I don't know about other people listening to your explanation, Jed, but you had me at statistics.
Yeah, no, the statistics is a really interesting part of it, because alongside the people are doing newspapers and they're writing stories and stuff like that. Yeah, that's fine. That's cool. But there's an entire side of the community that absolutely loves analysis. We've managed to tell the game to export a whole bunch of data to a particular spreadsheet, and then that spreadsheet is going to be made publicly available. But also Twitch users can just request information whenever they want about specific things, about who's winning, about how much gold this particular civ has and what their ranking is in the world relative to other people. So there's just so much stuff that we've done that we've been able to do just because we've kind of been able to put our heads down and go, okay, what can we do if we're working together instead of just me by myself?
The only other question is, when's Civ 6 Battle Royale coming out?
Firaxis had actually contacted me about that at some point, and they actually did their own Battle Royale and used the Battle Royale name. To be fair, they did credit me personally for coming up with the name, even though I didn't really come up with it, but they're using the name because the other Battle Royale was popular. But when is the Civ 6 Battle Royale? When there's more mods out there? The modding community needs to be something for the Battle Royale to be anything. If there's more of a diversity in terms of civilizations that can be put on a map, and you know, if there are AI improvements and just a lot of different visual changes, the tiny little things that really make the game interesting, then yeah, it can work. But there needs to be more mods and more civilizations out there and a more balanced approach to how we actually look at the in-game world and make sure that everybody is on an equal playing field. That's the optimal goal.
So, never.
When? No, yeah. We'll see. But that's the thing. I'm from the perspective that naturally mods are going to develop over the next couple of years, and naturally the game's going to get better in the next couple of years. Civ is always an investment, I guess. Not a lot of people actually know it, but a lot of people who are longtime fans of the series will buy it knowing full well that it's going to be a bit crappy at first. But because we can, you know, we actually trust developers to listen to feedback and incorporate it and just improve it over time. If you look at Brave New World compared to Civ 5 release, and if you look at Civ 6's release compared to the Civ 5 release, we're so far ahead of where Civ 5 was when it was released. So I'm not really concerned about. Yeah, no, I'm not concerned about mods and balance things at this game because inside of the game at the moment, because just we can complain at this point, but that's the best thing that we can do. Because if we do complain, then things can get changed. But over time, yeah, it's just going to get better.
You know, I was tempted to ask you if you've been approached about, you know, having a battle royale for Civilization Beyond Earth, but I'm not going to put you on.
Yeah, I have.
Oh,
yeah? I had, yeah.
What was the response to that request?
What I wanted to do was a bit more resource intensive than what they had planned. It required a lot more research into how to create a battle royale, because creating an AI game, anybody can create an AI game, but how to actually create something that people can actually connect to is something that is extraordinarily different. So I was suggesting maybe you actually design a world map inside of Beyond Earth, of Earth, and then place them just like based on like the map that the Firaxis had come up with of where the Beyond Earth civs kind of vaguely looked. But can't do that because there was no world builder for Beyond Earth, which was, it's a bit of a shame, but that would have been cool if that could happen.
You can still use the Civ 5 world builder.
Yeah, and then transport it over. But the thing is, just I was already so busy focused on other things. But yeah, I'm very open to working with Firaxis in the future regarding the Battle Royale.
I was kind of looking forward to your trying to explain true start locations for, you know, Civilization Beyond Earth. But anyway.
Yep.
All right. Well, that is the Civ Battle Royale. You can check that out over on the Reddit. I don't suppose there's not like an official website for the Battle Royale, is there?
There's going to be battleroyale.tv in the future. So there's so much information absolutely everywhere. It's not unified pretty much anywhere because it's just, if you're running a solo project, it's really hard to document absolutely everything. But now that we do have an organizational structure, there's just finding information on the Battle Royale won't be difficult in the future. But as of now, yeah, just stay tuned and try to look out, because when we go to release, we're going to release, you'll hear about it, you'll know about it.
Episode 273 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, and Magin.
John C. Nunn's discussion on if it's ever worth the 3x warmongering penalty to raise a captured city in order to refound the city, and the tile it should have been founded in to begin with.
Well, there's an easy way to fix that. Tell it how to pick better.
Well, that'd be nice first.
Well, as it
my
stands,
answer to this is twofold. First of all, the warmongering penalty as it stands in Civ right now is functionally irrelevant. However, you still might want to do this for other reasons.
Yeah. Even if there wasn't a penalty, there's...
Functionally, there isn't.
Yeah.
If you're taking cities, it's already huge. So,
I mean, my gosh, I've been hit with a warmonger penalty when someone declared on me.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the warmonger, but I'm defending myself. Yeah, you found yourself at the target of a warmonger, so you're going to war. Therefore, you're a warmonger. Yeah, sure. Great. If I want that city somewhere else, I'm willing to refound it because it's going to be that advantageous to refound it and build that city up again in that better location, then yes, I'm going to do it, irrespective of whether there's the warmongering penalty. And as has already been said, you're going to have that anyway, so it doesn't even really enter into my equation. It just gives me another reason to laugh or cry or both. It doesn't change my decision, though.
Yeah, no, I'm much the same. If, like, the AI plants a city that's in the wrong spot, then I will burn it down if I don't want it. For me, the balance is more of how much stuff is already in the city. How many districts are already there? Is there a wonder there? Is it worth burning it down just to move it one tile based on what it can produce versus whether or not it was bad? The actual warmongering penalty is
You know, your comment about the city having a wonder in it, seeing as how the wonder takes up a place on the map, if you then found a new city that can then have that hex with the wonder in it within your border, someone could say, well, doesn't that mean that you then get the wonder?
Well, you'd hope, but nope.
It should be based on what it is right now, but then I also question, should that in fact be just because it happens to be on the map? But if you went to the point of actually taking the city that had it, and then you decided to raise it, and you're willing to then resettle, so long as it is within your borders at that particular point in time, seeing as how it would have had to been in your borders to begin with for someone to construct it, then yay, you have that wonder. Because it wasn't actually in the city hex that you raised everything on.
I'd be perfectly happy if wonders actually stayed on the map. And then, yes, if you dropped a brand new city next to that wonder or put a city down and it picked up the wonder location, then you would automatically get access to it. That would make sense. Although I don't think the code's built for that right now.
No.
Let alone for stuff like, hey, I conquered Alhambra and where's my extra policy slot? Oh, wait, I don't get one.
Yes, those things that are decided upon instantly upon the wonder's construction, and then, yeah, it only applies to that
person. And then never again.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want it to be, so, I constructed Alhambra, I got to choose this extra policy. Hey, I'm going to go and let someone take that city, and then I'm going to recapture it, and then I'm going to be able to choose the policy again. No, you've got a new owner for the wonder conferred on the new owner.
And I wouldn't be all that upset if districts stayed on the map as well when you burn down a city.
Especially how long it takes to construct them as the game. Oh, that's something else again, right, yeah. But still, even if it was a reasonable amount of time, yes, district didn't go away, instantaneously no less, just because the city is gone when it's not on the same X. For episode 274 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Mad Jid, and Canis Albinus. History respond.
I'm guessing it's a history professor and another random history professor who makes video game videos decided that they wanted to get together and talk about random pieces of random academia nonsense, jargon, weird stuff, and apply it to Civ like Civ is actually a game about history, which we all know is not true. It's a game that uses gameplay mechanics that are window dressed as history and then backported to make sense.
I would say your summary is about two-thirds of the way there.
Also, he thinks that the Industrial Revolution in Europe was a mistake, an accident, because it was lucky. To which I say, no.
To which I say, you're an idiot.
On the History Respond YouTube channel, it was created by Bob Whitaker, a history PhD and professor from Austin, Texas, although he teaches at Louisiana Woo-hoo! Tech. He teaches at Louisiana Tech, yeah. I knew Matthew's favoritism would evaporate quickly.
What's wrong with Louisiana?
It's not Texas.
Yes. Texas. If it's not yet. Texas, then that's its problem.
That's right.
Might be later.
Bob is joined by John Harney, an associate editor. He's an assistant professor of Asian history at the Center College in Kentucky. So I learned about a new place of higher learning. I did not know about Center College in Kentucky. In this episode of History Respond, Dr. Tonio Andretti. Yes, I said Andretti. Maggie's interested. He is spoken to by John Harney, professor of history at Emory University, about how Civ 6 adapts human history to gameplay. It's actually a condensed version of a podcast that runs 42 minutes. This is only about 17 minutes. They discuss civilization and how we tell history, Civilization 6 and historical models, gameplay and history in Civ, and things we would like to see in future games.
No.
Oh, Canis does not want future Civ games. He wants the series to end with Civ 6. Okay.
When I watch this video, I facepalm so many times in that section. No, 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 no.
We should bring back events where you lose without agency.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, favorite.
Did you know somewhere in here, somebody was talking about in the comments that you should bring back plagues and train changes.
That came up in the video itself, too.
I remember that you would basically whip your population down to one because at that point, it would stay less long, and then you could just regrow afterward.
Well, whipping your population is always fun times anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just whip your population down to one. No game mechanics going to empty the city, because they would consider that bad.
There was one briefly in Civ 4. They did patch it out, the tsunami event. If your city was like below pop 6, it could completely annihilate it, from what I remember.
Yeah. That last pop will never be plagued, because if they plague it and kill it, then it would wipe out the city, so the last pop would never be plagued.
And it hits everybody equally, so...
Did you know about global utility of hitting everybody equally? Did you know that plagues never did that?
No, they didn't.
Never did that? They hit areas, so now you're randomly smacking up different areas of the map, which means, hey look, the player just got hit by the only plague in the game. And it only hit the continent of the player, and all the AIs are on different continents, and therefore they didn't get hit by it. Guess what the player's doing?
Dying.
No, hitting the go fuck yourself button.
Restart.
Yep.
Exit to menu.
It's good design.
The nope button.
Now let's incorporate that into real life. Restart. Restart button.
A little bit harder, Dan.
I think we can agree when Harney says he very much likes districts, they're cool, that you'll do better to specialize, that give cities personality, sure. But he believes that 2K and Firaxis had grand ambitions for greater integration between the construction and science of man and the land, to be realized with global events or even see a return to resource depletion.
Yay, let's go to resource depletion. Did you realize we're not actually using resources that way, so thanks. Come again, when you actually understand the rules of the game.
Except helium.
I may give him one nod here to be the first person I can recall talking about what they would like to see in a Civilization 8. Yes, that's right. Starts talking about Civ 8 as being a transition from an industrial to a service economy. Quote unquote.
What?
Well, how would you... No.
So we're going to change the scope of the game completely? Question mark?
No, I think what he may have been saying is something that, no, actually that's not brand new. Other people have said it before in the past, is that as the world's history has progressed, there has been fundamental changes in the economy.
Yeah.
So at some point long ago, you threw lots of people with whips at other people and said, go build shit. And then later, you thought about paying them. because then getting experts was better. And then somewhere along the way you said, oh, well, we have these machines. We can start doing stuff in factories. And then later you go, factory work is for the poor. Services, where is that? Actual changes in economy. And I know that was like a horrible history lesson, but basically, yeah, the thought line is that as you hit certain eras in the game, that your game economy shifts away so that in later eras, instead of going, ooh, you need production for everything, have it turn into you need population / gold for everything, and that you don't need production so much anymore. Instead of needing science constantly to get new techs, that at some point you bring back the economic slider where you need to throw your money into science. Weird crap like that.
A little later after that, he then said, the Paradox Games.
The Paradox Games only go after a very small slice of time. They can do things that have events that are within those smaller timelines and have it make sense.
On the Paradox Games, he says they have the virtue of being games where you're not going to quote-unquote win, whereas Civ feels tied to that, for better or worse, so how they would get away from that, I don't know.
Paradox Games, you never win? No. They haven't designed the game like that. I haven't won. I'm simulating the universe. Yeah, no.
I don't know that there's anything I can say here that would be your thing.
If you exist at the end game screen, you win?
No, because then you can still be a little crap hole.
And to conclude, just for, one point from earlier in this condensed version, again, on History Respawn, Civilization VI, while talking about Civ and historical models, the claim is that while Civ follows a quote-unquote progressive path through the technology tree, and now the civics tree as well with Civ VI, but that contingency also plays a very important role. Right from a favorable placement on the board means that your trajectory is easier, and that geographical favoring and legacy can really determine so much of the game later on. Yes. And?
There's a theory called environmental determinism that nobody believes, and that's what this is, basically. The idea that a nation is only great because it spawned on the Earth in a certain way. Like, the reason that the old world was more prosperous than the new world is because all
That's absolutely
of the,
true in Civ 4.
Because all of the land was straddling the areas that promote crops, like the east-west axis as opposed to the north-south axis like in the Americas.
That makes no sense. North America does better crops than Europe. The reason Europe did better than North America is because people started in Africa.
So you're making a geographical argument after all.
Well, I am, but it's a better one because humanity started in Africa and expanded from there and had more time in co-location to do technology.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure that in the Ice Age, everybody everywhere was the same, basically.
And no. Well, there was more people on the one side. I mean, the Ice Age is why there's people in North America, or was.
Yeah.
But they had to go pretty far south, and they spent like a long time not doing stuff other than trying to get away from the ice. While they were doing that, other people were building cities, and Gilgamesh was up and eating his Wheaties in a place that didn't get hit by the Ice Age.
Well, it did. It just didn't get icy.
Yeah, it's not as bad.
Certainly, you have a favorable place on the board. Your trajectory can be easier, assuming you capitalize on that. And just because you have an unfavorable placement doesn't mean in and of itself you're screwed. It just means your trajectory is going to be different, and you're going to have to do either that much more and or that much more different than somebody else. So, yeah, this, you're fated notion that, oh, good favorable starting placement, you're going to do well, and that's why you did well. Nope, you skipped too many steps.
You spawn near jungle in Civ 4, so get wrecked.
Yep.
It's where my people go on safari, but they don't really want to live there.
But we started in it, even though no one else did.
Yeah, but you can't chop it at all until ironworking. It's impossible. So you can't do anything. No yields for you. You scrub.
I want to go back to the day where you can't chop jungle until the mid-Renaissance or later.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that size.
That'd be great. That would make the game a lot better. We should go that route. You're right.
It would make it better.
Great and good.
It would. It would make it better.
It would make it good.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-228-8-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series official website at
thepolycast.net.
Also, noting Australia OP, please nerf.
No, leave it alone.
Mackie's fine with it being overpowered as long as only she gets to play it in our multiplayer games.
That's why I suggest I could alternate weekends. Let you guys try it. What's really going to be fun is one of these weekends we're going to have Australia as an AI and we're going to be both.
No. I like Mackie's suggestion. I'll play Australia one weekend, then the rest of you in the group, the other half dozen plus of you, can fight amongst yourselves who gets to play it in the off week that I'm not playing it. No, I'm not going to agree to that, Mackie. No.
All right. Well, my turn again to do the ending, so get out.
That's not how
you sound like my dad. Jeez, what is it with this podcast?
Dad issues.
Oh god, I hope people don't read into this, but they will. So fight me. No kernels of truth in this one.
Yep, you tell somebody not to do something, they're probably going to do it. So
please,
you
help,
said
please.
It, you were probably fine.
I'm really upset. I'm really unhappy.
We don't care about your life, what's going on in the Civ games.
Oh boy.
This has been episode 276 of Polycast. I've been Ned, Jin, and all these people have been here, like Mackie.
Who needs more caffeine or something? Why am I yawning?
The Mian team.
In a battle royale, a 7-way, everybody wins.
Ooh.
Mr. Quick.
So, tell me about your problems.
And we've been joined by T-Pang?
That works. I don't think Mackie has a right to complain about caffeine when I'm up here at 6 o'clock in the bloody morning.
I know. I was trying to think of the time conversion earlier, and I'm like, whatever it is.
Oh, man.
Oh, everyone knows Civ modders don't sleep.
That's true. So how should I do this intro?
Like everybody else does.
Wrong. This is the part where you expect me to have listened to a Polycast.
Well, that's silly. We would never expect such things.
I got a phone, Mackie, here.
Oh, this again? Okay.
Hey, man, I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning. What excuse is there? Yeah, hopefully I don't screw this up for you guys and make you look terrible. Because, you know, can't get much worse, but I'm on the team, so yeah. It might.
Wait. Did you just say the show can't get much worse, but now you're on? Wait a minute.
He's carpet insulting all of us at the same time, including himself.
Yeah, see, yes. I'm bringing you down to my level and beating you with experience. That's just...
Is that bug where you clear war on yourself and it brings in your allies still in the game? I saw a report on that earlier that, like, a lot of people confirmed they were experiencing. It sounds interesting. Their allies in-game also attacked them because their ally attacked them, which was themselves.
Better than a bogan hole.
Yeah, absolutely. So, doesn't that mean something else in Canada?
Nope.
Nope, definitely not. Definitely not. Fix that in post. Anyway.
Yes, you'll repeat it over and over and over again, sure. And I'll be like, Jet, stop. Already, we heard you the first time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Maggie's fan agrees.
Yeah. Hi, fan. How you doing?
I won't ignore it. I will take it under advisement.
Okay, Donald.
What does Donald Duck have to do with this, Mackie? Why are we... Oh, I'm just kidding.
Crack.
Tell that to my dad. No, that was a joke.
Whoa. What's this email from Jet's dad? What? Jet'sdad@gmail.com.
Dad, get off the stream. I'm doing something with my friends.
Oh, that can't be true. You have no friends. Wait, what?
Token Australian. That sounds like something that an Australian would say, and I'm kind of disappointed in my country that we haven't said something as far.
That's definitely something that an Australian wouldn't say then.
So should I just do that again?
No. Keep going.
Imagine.
Don't worry. What? No, I already did my thing. Keep going.
No, don't worry. I'll fix it in post. It's fine. Air quotes fixed. It's good.
Now you can find out what Dave actually puts it in post.
Record date?
February 18th, 2017.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.